From the highest of highs to the lowest of lows, Mike Iaconelli has run the gamut. And, Mike, I guess the first thing is right now it looks like you're fishing about as well as you could possibly fish.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I haven't felt, you know, this confident in my fishing and my figuring out patterns for a long time. I mean, it's a really good feeling to get out in the water, and you almost feel in tune to what the bass are doing and their movements and the seasonal pattern. And, you know, it really reminds me of back when I was a kid, you know, when I was a teenager, you know, fishing out of my John boat, and you get out in the lake and just have fun and let the fish talk to you and just get into the rhythm of the fish. And that's what I feel like again, and it's a great feeling, and I hope it doesn't go away for a while.
Well, I guess I'd be remiss if I didn't bring up, you know, the Bassmaster Classic DQ and where that really has gotten you. But, you know, a lot of guys would probably, after something like that, may have fallen on their face. But it seems like you've just taken that thing and moved to a new level with your fishing.
Absolutely. You know, I mean, you know, looking back on it, you know, again, it was a bad situation, and I handled it the wrong way. You know, I don't blame it on anybody but myself. You know, but I look back at it, and it was a learned experience, you know. And in hindsight, looking at it, you know, really what was happening, Terry, is my life was kind of getting a little out of control. And what I mean by that is there were so many things on my plate leading up to the Classic and during the Classic, you know, from sponsorship obligations to outside industry opportunities, you know, to seminars, to shows that had 22 seminars before the Classic. I mean, really, you know, I think I kind of lost priorities in my life. And again, I blame that on nobody but myself. After that happened, you know, I got an opportunity to really settle down and say, you know, what is this all about for me? You know, what's my life about? What's my career about? And my family really, I think, helped me with that a lot. You know, I had the opportunity to spend time with my girls that week in Florida, and my mom, my uncle, my grandma, and you know, I really refocused that week after that happened, and I got back to my priorities. I mean, my priorities is my family, and my priorities is fishing, and I love to compete, and I'm passionate about the sport of bass fishing. And that's really what I gotten back to. So, you know, my mindset now is I love the sport, I love the fans, I love fishing, and I'm just going to keep moving forward and keep fishing hard.
Well, I tell you what, talk about shifting gears. You've done that very well. I guess one question that comes to mind for me is, did you learn anything from that experience that's really going to help you? You know, you talked about refocusing. Was that something that you felt that if that wouldn't have happened, you wouldn't have been able to do?
You know, I don't know. And again, you look back on stuff like that and you know, you ask yourself, you know, why that happened? Why did I do that? You know, why did it happen? But, you know, I kind of think there's reasons for everything, you know. And again, the biggest thing in life and in fishing, you know, is when you have a bad tournament or you have a bad experience, you learn from it. You move forward. You know, you don't just forget about it. You don't say, oh, who cares? You know, you say, here's what happened, you know. Do I look back at it and do I think it was handled the right way? Totally. No, I don't. But again, ultimately, you know, I'm the one that did that, and again, I'm learning from it. I'm moving forward. I feel like I'm a better fisherman. I feel like I'm a better person because of it. So, just move forward. You know, no regrets, and keep fishing hard. That's really my attitude right now.
Well, you know, Mike, I've had the opportunity to see you at a lot of events, and one in particular that comes to mind was your recent win at Gunnersville. And, you know, a lot of people, you know, it's the I hate Mike or I love Mike, you know, one of those kind of theories to life. But I saw fans embrace what you were doing. I saw kids coming up. I mean, it was unbelievable the numbers of people that you had that were following you around, talking to you, wanting autographs. I mean, even after when you won, I tried to get a minute with you, and you had about 60 or 70 people surrounding you the whole time.
Yeah, that was awesome. And, you know, I got to tell you, Terry, that's, you know, that's one of the things that keeps me going. You know, after that happened at the Classic, you know, there were a lot of things, you know, said, and you know, it was hurtful. You know, I mean, I got to be honest with you, I'm human, and I got feelings like everybody else, and there was a lot of hurtful things out there. And, you know, one option was to say, you know, this isn't worth it. You know, I'm just going to quit. I mean, it's not worth being put through all this pain, you know. But the other hand, half of me said, I've got a lot of fans that love me. I've got a lot of fans that support me. I've got sponsors that support me, and my family supports me. And, you know, that's what kept me going. You know, and at Gunnersville, man, that really hit home, you know. And that's really, I kind of addressed it on stage. I actually dedicated that win to my family, my sponsors, and the fans have stuck with me, you know. And again, that's what keeps me going. I mean, there's no better feeling in the world than to be accepted by people and to have, you know, have kids. I mean, I can't tell you the feeling that gives me to have kids look up to you like that. And you know, I have an opportunity to spread the word about fishing and what a great sport it is. And And I'm not going to let go of that. You know, I'm going to take advantage of it, and I'm going to keep fishing.
Well, let me talk about a few things here, just kind of reminisce with you if I can. Number one, you know, of course, the Bassmaster Classic win was very, very high on your list. The television exposure that you've received has been unbelievable. Sometimes that's a godsend. Sometimes that probably can be detrimental, as we've seen with the Classic. But then you've got now you've got the Guntersville win. You're right now leading the Angler of the Year in the Elite Series, you know, and have come up and just keep continually catching fish, finished 12th, of course, at Clark Hill, and, you know, come out of that. It seems like, you know, you elevate to the level sometimes of, you know, when you look at the whole sport and where you're at, you elevate to the level what you need to do to be successful.
Yeah, I think that's part of, I guess, part of my mentality is just to never give up. And, again, I know I say that all the time, you know, but I feel like, you know, when there's adversity, you know, again, there's two ways to handle it. There's, you know, you could just say, forget it, I quit, or you could keep pushing forward, keep moving forward, you know, and that's really my strength in fishing. That's my strength in life is to just keep on plugging, you know, and, you know, this year, I mean, I got to tell you, you know, Angler of the Year obviously is a goal. That's something I want to accomplish, you know, but my motto this year is to be consistent, to catch a limit in every tournament. To go out there and try to keep getting all top 20s. You know, and if I do that and at the end of the year I don't end up Angler of the Year, I've got no regrets, you know. But for me to keep focusing hard and, again, to be refocused, to have my passion back, and my ultimate passion is to compete and to figure out bass, and that's what I love to do.
Well, I watched you at Guntersville on the water and was in a camera boat and actually watched you while you were fishing. You were way out in a bay near Browns Creek, of course, and you had a little pattern going, and I'm watching you fish, and you could just tell. I mean, I don't know how many casts you made during that day, but it had to be in the, you know, the multiple thousands of casts, and you had a little deal going there, and it worked out for you pretty well.
Absolutely, yeah. You know, Guntersville is a special lake to me. It's got grass in it, you know, and when I get into a grass lake, I just something about it that makes me feel comfortable. But I fished a technique called ripping a crankbait, and it's something I actually learned back in my Federation days, fishing the lakes here in North Jersey. And, you know, it's a great technique. And basically what it is, it's purposely getting a billed crankbait stuck in the grass, and it could be hydro, it could be milfoil, it could be whatever, and ripping that crankbait from the grass. And when you actually pop or rip that crankbait from the grass, it triggers a bite. And at Guntersville, that was perfect for me. It was a perfect scenario. You had post-spawn fish that didn't want to eat. They didn't want to actively feed. But when that crankbait ripped out of that grass, it triggered a reaction strike. And, you know, that really, for me, when I'm fishing one of my strengths and I've got them locked and almost every cast I'm focused on what that crankbait's doing, I just feel totally comfortable and it all fell into place. And when you win by 2 ounces, I'm going to tell you, it's meant to be. So it was meant to be for me in that tournament.
Yeah, Alton Jones, of course, finished second. Now, let's talk a little bit. I want to break this down a little bit because you can't just use any rod. You can't use a cranking stick or something like that. You had to use a special rod, I would think. And what were the bait selections you had there?
Absolutely, yeah. And you know, when you think about ripping a crankbait out of grass, you know, the first thing that pops to your mind is, man, you need a stiff graphite rod and you need braided line to be able to rip that crankbait from the grass. But here's the twist in that. I actually use a 7-foot fiberglass rod. I use a real flimsy, you know, medium, like a 50-50 action rod, and I use mono. I use Berkeley Sensation regular monofilament. And people are like, why do you do that? And the deal to it is you actually want that crankbait to rubber band up or pop up out of the grass. You don't want it to rip straight through the grass. And so it's a lot of work. I mean, I got to tell you, I had blisters on my hand at the end of 4 days, but that soft rod and that stretchy mono actually helps that crankbait rubber band up out of the grass, and that's key. The baits are also key. You know, picking a bait that dives to the zone of the edge of the grass, and that's what I tried to do with two different crankbaits. My primary crankbait was a medium deep diving Berkeley Frenzy blue chartreuse back, and it was perfect for that 8 to 10-foot zone. That's the outside edge of the hydrilla. But for the inside edge of the hydrilla, you know, the shallow side, and that zone was about 4 to 5-foot, I needed another crankbait, and I threw a Rapala DT series, DT6, in the same color, blue and chartreuse. And just, you know, those two crankbaits let me have that 1-2 punch on the different lines, and that triggering, popping motion of that bait got those bites for me.
Well, I can tell you, I watched you do it, so I know that's exactly the case. And I would have thought it was maybe a stiffer rod, so that shows you the radio guy doesn't know much. But, Mike, you know, as always, you know, you're always a pleasure to talk to. The fans love you, and you know, it's one of those things where the hill is a big one, but you seem to be climbing right over the top of it. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks, Terry. Appreciate it.
I'm Terry Brown, and this has been Bass Fan Radio.